Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Friday on the Other Side here at Mind Talk. Friday on the Other Side is when we take a look at incidents, experiences in the news, in our world, and we focus on them from the psychological perspective. Today is no different. I am really pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Amy B. Scher. Amy is cited as a leading voice in the field of mind-body-spirit healing. She is an energy therapist and uses energy therapy techniques to help those experiencing illness and those in need of emotional healing. Amy Scher is also the author of How to Heal Yourself When No One Else Can, a total self-healing approach for mind, body, and spirit. Amy B. Scher, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, Amy, I want to start off with asking you exactly what energy healing is.
Sure. So energy therapy or energy healing is utilizing the body's energy system to optimize well-being. So a lot of us think that we're just all physical, but we actually have an entire network of energies that run through our bodies. And when those energies become imbalanced or stagnant, we can experience physical and emotional symptoms. So what I help people do is release stuck energy from their body, and particularly energy that's stuck because of old beliefs we have, old emotions we're holding on to, negative self-talk, things that pertain to the emotional aspect of things. And we help clear those stuck energies so the energy system can run smoothly, and so can the body, mind, and spirit.
All right, so if I'm looking at myself in a mirror, do I see my energy? How do I know what my energy is or where it is or what it looks like? Help me out.
So most people don't see their energy. There are people who can see energy. I am not one of them, but your energy runs in throughout your entire body. And we can kind of look at it, you know, we have a subtle energy body, which we can't see, but we do know that energy runs through the body. You know, there's diagnostic testings like EKGs that actually is measuring the electricity or the energy in our heart. So there's a more subtle energy network that we can't see or measure, and that is based on the Chinese meridian system. And so a lot of people who are understand that, you know, that sort of concept. And so we can't see it, but we know it's there through studies and through many generations of healing.
All right. So is it fair to say that the energy in my body is the same as the electricity in my body?
Yes, there's just a more subtle, sort of variations as far as how strong and how measurable that energy is. But yes, that's fair to say. It's a type of a sort of electricity that runs through your body.
Okay, so we're talking about energy healing, energy therapy. It's something that you did not come to immediately. You actually had some pretty interesting experiences yourself before you came to this kind of work. You talk about at the age of 25, you were working in your idea of a dream job. What was that job?
I was working as a marketing director for Harley Davidson, which was absolutely a dream job for me, and started having some health issues, which led me away from that job and into a whole different world.
What was so wonderful about that job? Did you get to ride a Harley? That's really all I want to know.
I did. I got to sit on Harleys. And actually, I never drove a Harley, but I did get to ride a Harley.
Okay.
So that was very fun. But I really, I had had marketing jobs before, and that was just a really fun brand to work for. The culture was really fun. The people at the company were fun. We got to do really fun events. So I think that's why it was my dream job. And I really actually liked the message of the company, which was freedom and doing your own thing, and just the sort of energy around it I really loved.
So it kind of worked for you.
It did. It did. It was a very fun job, and it was challenging in some ways. And yeah, it was a great job. What 25-year-old doesn't want to work for a company like Harley Davidson, right?
There you go. Now, what began to happen? You said you began to have some physical challenges. What was going on?
Yeah, I started to notice that I was having a hard time walking up the little ramp from my office to the kitchen in my building. It was a very gentle ramp, but I started felt some weakness in my legs, which turned into me tripping often, and then I started having some pain and tingling in my feet that then ended up kind of moving up my legs, and so started really having a hard time walking and was in a lot of pain. So I went to my regular doctor, who kind of said, you know, I'm not sure, and sent me to a neurologist who ordered me off work. And it turned out that my nerves were degenerating in my body at a very rapid pace, which is what was causing the symptom.
Now, that seems to me like 25 is kind of young for that kind of physical issue to be showing itself. What were your doctors saying to you was your prognosis?
So my doctors were saying exactly what you're saying, which is, where is this coming from? You're so young to have this type of thing. So it was diagnosed as a type of neuropathy, which we often see in people experiencing diabetes, but I didn't have diabetes, and I was very young to have that. So it actually took many years of testing to find out that I had Lyme disease, and I was apparently, although I don't remember, it was bitten by a tick that transferred to me a bacteria that created Lyme disease, which then went undiagnosed and untreated for so long that it was actually attacking my nerves. And so that was the real sort of quote-unquote cause of that degenerating condition, the neuropathy.
Now, you say that there was a point at which you were just in so much pain that you were more terrified of living than dying.
Yeah, so it started with the tripping and the weakness in my legs in my office. But then over the next years, I really became bedridden. The disease attacked my arms. I couldn't lift my arms like up to even, you know, put my own hair in a ponytail. I just became really weak and in pain. And I went through a lot of various treatments where nothing was really working. And, you know, when I first got diagnosed, I was really afraid that I would die, that this wouldn't get fixed. And then at some point I really became afraid that I would live like that for the rest of my life. And being so young, that could potentially have been a very long time.
Absolutely. And it seems like there were many years when you actually did get tested for Lyme disease, but it did not come back positive.
That's very true, and that I found out was really, really typical. Testing and diagnosis for Lyme disease are a very tough thing, and many, many people show negative on tests when really they're positive. So once I actually had my blood work sent to a lab that specialized in tick-borne diseases, then only then did it come back positive. But it takes specialty testing to really get an accurate read.
It's kind of extraordinary. Any of these illnesses that folks can find themselves living with that are hard to diagnose or are often misdiagnosed, it really kind of sends a chill through you. You comment that some of the misdiagnosis for folks who have Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, lupus, chronic fatigue syndrome, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, migraines, learning disabilities, bipolar disorder, Parkinson's disease, heart arrhythmias, and more. I mean, it just sounds like in terms of the world of diagnosis, they kind of throw everything at the wall, and Lyme disease is just doesn't seem to be one of them.
Yeah, it's very true. There's a lot of controversy among two different medical camps and who's going to pay for the treatment of Lyme disease and how it's diagnosed. And it's really a mess. And it does create a situation where people aren't getting diagnosed. And the difficulty, in all fairness, is also that list you just read off is that, you know, usually there's a myriad of symptoms that are just so overwhelming they could kind of be anything. I mean, a lot of times they're Lyme disease. A lot of times people, you know, go on for years with multiple sclerosis and then find out that it was, you know, Lyme disease mimicking multiple sclerosis, or that Lyme disease caused multiple sclerosis, or all of these different things, and then can go back and work on taking care of the original infection. And for a lot of people, that actually makes a really big difference in their symptoms. But when you go to a doctor and you have, you know, it started for me as this nerve pain, but then I also ended up with a heart condition. I also ended up with full-blown arthritis. Lyme disease often attacks various systems in the body, so the digestive system and the nervous system, and then it becomes really hard to see what's what.
Well, yeah, it kind of makes sense. It almost looks like you look like and feel like a medical dictionary. You don't know what's going on, and everything seems to be going on all at the same time.
Exactly. And for me, in the very beginning, I would go to different doctors, a gastroenterologist for the digestive issues, and then a neurologist for the nerve pain, and then, you know, a rheumatoid doctor for the joint pain. And it's hard because you're seeing individual people. Nobody's looking at the whole picture. And, you know, it's just tough. Doctors do the best they can, but it's hard to diagnose. So the more patients hear about this and can go to their doctors, and sometimes it takes a few doctors to, you know, to find one that actually is really familiar and knowledgeable about Lyme disease and how it can manifest. But the more that we educate people, the more that this becomes a possibility that people find out that they have this and can then work on treating it.
You know, I think about the people who, whether it's Lyme disease or it's something else, find themselves going to doctor after doctor. They're not getting a definitive diagnosis. Really can affect your sense of yourself, your self-esteem, your depression levels. Did any of that happen for you?
Yes, I was actually really lucky in the fact that, unlike other people I knew who had similar physical issues, I never had a doctor that thought I was making it up. And so I hear that a lot now with the clients that I work with, that they've gone to doctors who just don't believe them, that they're so sick. And I never had that, so I felt really lucky. But it certainly was terribly frustrating to go from doctor to doctor and nobody was sort of cross-examining what was going on and considering that it was something wrong with my entire body or my entire immune system, as opposed to this problem in the digestive system and this here and this here. And it was very frustrating not to have a diagnosis. And along the way, I did have different diagnoses, but they weren't, but it was never, this is what's quote unquote causing it, if that makes sense. It was you have neuropathy here and you have this here, and it was all different.
And at one point you were taking 44 pills and antibiotic shots every day?
I was because I was trying to, I mean, these were all prescribed obviously, but I was trying to, you know, kill the bacteria. And then I was having so many problems with my organs. So I was taking, you know, stuff for liver detox, and then I was taking heart medication, and then I was taking, it just all added up because so many things were wrong.
You decided that you were going to take a little tiny trip. So you took a little tiny trip to where?
I went to New Delhi, India, where I found out there was an experimental stem cell clinic where people were getting good results as far as repairing their body and nerves.
So what did you do?
So I took a little trip to New Delhi, India, against my doctor's best advice, And I went through almost 9 weeks of an experimental stem cell treatment. And because I had had so much antibiotic treatment in order to kill the bacteria that caused the Lyme disease, I needed something to help repair my body because, like I just mentioned, my heart was a mess. My organs were a total mess. I was 5 minutes from getting my gallbladder taken out, and my liver wasn't functioning correctly, and my nerves were damaged. And I knew sort of instinctively that in order to recover or have any chance at recovering, I needed to repair my body as opposed to just attack the bacteria. And so that's really what I went to see if the stem cells could do. And they did really make a huge difference. I was at a little 20-bed clinic, and most of the other patients there were spinal cord injury patients. But there were a couple of, you know, Parkinson's, autoimmune, there was a diabetic patient, just various people from all over the world trying to repair their bodies in different ways.
And was your body repaired?
My body was, for all, yes, intents and purposes, repaired. I arrived in New Delhi in a wheelchair because I couldn't walk very far, and I left completely walking on my own and off of most of the medication that I started on,
So you were cured, right?
I was cured at that time. Yes, I was cured.
That sounds like a caveat. What do you mean you were cured at that time?
So I thought I was cured, and I went home, and everything was great, and it was sometime later where my symptoms started to appear again. And they weren't nearly as bad, but they were still a little bit terrifying because I had felt good for quite a while, and I started getting some tingling in my legs again. I started getting really tired. I started having some of my food allergies come back. And I was tested again for Lyme disease, and I tested negative, so that never came back. But it appeared that my immune system was very suppressed again. I was having having a hard time with my immune system again. And that's when I had to take a big deep breath and go, okay, there must be something else contributing to this pattern of illness in my body besides just a bacteria or this nerve issue or this, you know, these million other things.
And was that the point at which you began to turn your attention towards energy medicine?
Yes, that was when I turned my attention. And the interesting thing is that I really did it because I was out of money. I was out of patience. I didn't know what else to do. And I actually started by going to a Chinese medicine doctor. I was in London at the time where I really wasn't feeling good. And I started going to a Chinese medicine doctor, which I had actually tried before during my long healing journey and didn't see much difference. But I went again and I saw a tiny, tiny bit of difference. And Chinese medicine is basically energy medicine. It's moving and balancing the meridians or the energy system. And so that turned me on to sort of researching and reading about energy medicine, thinking if this helped a tiny bit, maybe I could take it a little bit further.
Amy, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, you make the point that as part of one's overall healing, you have to become who you really are. And so when we come back, I want to pick up right there because we hear that a lot, and I'm not sure that many people know what that actually means. So that's where we're going to pick up. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We will return in just a moment. we've been talking about your introduction into energy therapy and emotional healing techniques, and you say that part of, in fact, it's the name of your book, How to Heal Yourself When No One Else Can, a total self-healing approach for mind, body, and spirit. And you say that a key factor in that is coming into alignment with who you truly are. What does that mean?
So this is a really good question because we do hear so much about this. If it's okay, I'm just going to read a couple of lines from the book that I think sum it up, and then we can talk about it. Is that okay?
That's perfect.
Okay. Everything about well-being sits firmly on this very simple rule I've learned. You must become who you really are. You must be the real you. That means to love, accept, and be yourself no matter what. You can't contract your energy for others or for fear or for anything else. No light dimming or living small allowed. This journey of healing is to be yourself. In fact, true healing is not measured by reaching a place where you are free of negative emotions or have attained a physical healing. I truly believe that straying from and separating from your inner being or who you really are is the root of discontent in the mind, body, and spirit. So what I mean by being who you really are is not changing yourself, not limiting yourself, not light dimming who you really are for others because of fear, to fit into a specific relationship. In my book, I actually have clients ask me this all the time, and one of them said, can you tell me some ways that you did it so I can understand how were you not who you really were? And so I ended up writing her out a list of my own personal list of all the ways that I wasn't being who I really was. And once I got over the fear of doing that, I actually included it in the book because so many people want to know. So I think fear is one of the biggest things, is being scared to express who you really are because people might not like you or something bad might happen. That was probably the biggest thing for me and the biggest thing I see in clients. You know, we don't want to push ourselves because what if we fail, and we don't want to go do this because what if we get hurt? And not that fear is a bad thing, but when it suppresses the true nature of who we are, it becomes a really big problem for the body. It kind of puts us in a container, and that's harmful to our body, mind, and spirit.
So it kind of sounds like if someone grew up in a household, for example, where everybody in the house worked in a particular, let's say everybody in the house was in education, and so yeah, that the children of that household really kind of learn overtly and covertly that education is what is expected of them, and they may in fact go into the educational field not necessarily because they want to, but because that is the expectation. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a really, really good example. Another one might be self-sacrifice. Like, I had an intense opposition to hurting people's feelings, even if it was unintentional. So because of that, I really avoided hurting anybody else at all costs. But I paid the price. I did things I didn't want to do. I put myself last. I never said, you know, no to others and yes to myself. I mean, I caused a lot of sort of inner conflict because I constantly self-sacrificed and I was very hard on myself. So any behaviors or patterns that we have that don't allow us to just live freely and somewhat, you know, as carefree as we can as adults, those are the types of things that prevent you from being who you really are. Being in relationships you know aren't good for you, talking yourself out of what your intuition is telling you about certain relationships, and then back to fear, not doing things because you're afraid you'll fail, or maybe you're afraid you'll succeed and then, you know, sort of outdo someone else in your life and that will cause a problem. So when we talk about who we really are, we are who we are at the core, and anything we do to suppress that person or manage that person in an unhealthy way is what I'm talking about as far as being who you really are, being the true you. Does that make sense?
It does, but I wonder, You said that you created a list for a client. So for the listeners, is that a place that you would suggest they start creating a list of what, the ways in which they suppress themselves or things they want to do?
Yeah, that could be a really interesting exercise.
Okay.
Yeah, that could be a really interesting exercise. I mean, most people, it's interesting, are drawn to my work because they already know they're doing it. They already know that they don't feel comfortable being who they really are, being comfortable in their own skin. I would say that's a really easy sort of description. So they know that, you know, they're trying to please their spouse all the time, and so they don't really speak up for what they want. Or they know that they're just so scared to, you know, go follow that maybe career that they really wanted and upset their family, or they are afraid to do it because it's too late, or they might fail. Or most people have a sense of how they're not living that they wish they were. Does that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it,
absolutely,
unless it's really interesting, but it is interesting to me that most people who come to me and my work already know, and they just need to know how to shift that or how to change it.
All right, so let's say that I've created this list and I now have staring me in the face information about what I am doing or not doing that really celebrates me who I am, me who I would love to be. You know, maybe I'm an accountant and what I really want to do is to bake cookies or something. Now what do I do?
So that's basically what the whole book is about, teaching us to go back and not to dwell on the past, but to go back and figure out what we're still holding on to that is preventing us from being who we really are. So with the example that you just told me about being an accountant over a baker, that could be fears that, you know, you might fail, or maybe there's a time in your past where you did follow the thing that you wanted to do and somebody got really upset with you. And there's something inside of you that tells you that that's just wrong to do again because look what happened last time. So the book is really going to, you know, walking readers through going back to figure out why we have the stuff that we have. Why are we stuck where we're stuck? And then takes them through a clearing process or a releasing process to release whatever it is. And it will be different. Some people it'll be a fear. Some people it'll be a belief. Like it's, you know, maybe it's emotionally unsafe for me to do what I want, meaning someone else will be upset with me and that relationship will go down the drain. So each sort of block that we have can be for different reasons.
You know, I think about folks who have had experiences in their earlier lives who, you know, at first blush, it may not seem like it's much of anything. But even as you're talking, you know, I would imagine that folks who are listening are thinking, well, wait a minute, that reminds me of X. And when X happened, this is kind of the way I reacted to it. And X may be a tiny moment in time, but that doesn't mean that it's had a tiny impact on who you were and who you are.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up, because most of the things that affect us are the tiny moment things. So, you know, the time that somebody, you know, called us a name in second grade, something that seems sort of fleeting in the, you know, as far as the big picture of our lives. So, but those are the things that get stuck. Those are the things that whisper these messages like you're not good enough or you really are stupid or whatever that person called you. The big things that happen, the bigger things that we consider traumatic in our lives, often those get worked out of the body more easily because we feel safe talking to people about them. We usually feel comfortable going to get help, maybe going to a therapist or a doctor or a friend, whoever. So those things get acknowledged and sort of processed out of our body. But the little things that we tell ourselves, that was no big deal, get over it, just move on, those things get stuck in the body.
So kind of the things that you may not believe you have a right to feel, then they just stay there inside of you.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I really teach people is whatever you feel is okay. You're human. Maybe you wish you weren't angry at that person for doing what they did, but you are. So you need to just be, you know, to work out that anger so you can move forward. When we talk ourselves out of our true emotion, all it does is get suppressed in our body. And when it gets suppressed in our body, it gets stuck there, and it will come back at some point to try to get you to deal with it again. But also it puts a terrible stress on the physical body. And if you have a pattern of suppressing emotion like I did, then you just end up with a big old pile stuck in your body. And eventually, you know, your body speaks to you through symptoms, and you have to go back and deal with that.
So how does energy therapy begin to help you to resolve that?
So when people ask me, how do you get over that stuff? How do you clear that old fear? And energy therapy was my answer to clearing it. I had definitely gone to my fair share of, you know, therapists to, you know, to do talk therapy or talk through it. And it didn't ever seem to get those things out of my body. So energy therapy is basically just a modality. And in energy therapy, I should say, and energy healing are interchangeable. So energy therapy is basically just a way of releasing that old energy or that old emotion or that old stagnant stuff that's stuck there. I tend to refer to it as emotional baggage because everybody kind of gets that. It's just a tool to release it from the body. It's just a set of techniques that we can use to clear it and actually just move it out of the body.
And so are these techniques, I mean, are they physical techniques? Are they emotional techniques? How does that all, when somebody comes to see you, for example, talk us through that process.
Sure. So I do 100% of my work via phone. I don't see anybody in person because I don't use any hands-on techniques. So while if you went to an acupuncturist or, you know, somebody who did a specific type of energy healing or energy therapy, they would do the work. I walk my clients through doing all of the work on themselves because I think it's extremely important for the body to feel safe. And when we do work on ourselves, it sends a very empowering message that we're safe in our own hands and that we're not helpless, that we can actually do something to help ourselves. So I use a variety of techniques, some that I created during my own healing journey and some that I learned. But most of them are either doing tapping on certain parts of the body on acupressure points or repeating certain phrases or scripts. So I just walk my clients through everything, and they either do it for themselves or just repeat after me. And so it's a very gentle release, basically. There's when you ask if it's physical or emotional, what I always focus on is releasing the emotional energy. Sometimes we do that through physically touching the body, like doing tapping on the face or body, but I focus on all emotional release because in my experience, the emotional energy that's stuck can really create a burden for the physical body. So by working that way, it can help support the healing in the physical body.
So when you say tapping, are you usually literally talking about taking a finger or two and literally tapping your body in various places?
Yep, exactly. And for one of the techniques that I created, we do tapping on the thymus gland, which is in the center of your chest. Your thymus gland is the seat of your immune system. And so we use that because that gland is heavily affected by stress and old emotion. We actually do tapping directly on the thymus gland, which again is in the chest, where we just take a few fingers and we tap on, you know, in the center of the chest. And we work on, we sometimes talk about specific emotions that are stuck or we do a variety of things, but tapping on that gland helps to, it's connected to the energy system. It helps to kind of send a vibration or a swish through the energy system and clear out that old emotion. So they're all very simple but powerful techniques.
So I'm just thinking about the technique you just described. Assuming that one has gone through the process and been able to relieve or reduce some of that blocked negative energy, is, for example, the exercise that you just described, is that something that you could do routinely for stress relief or stress management?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So there's a technique in the book called the thymus test and tap. And when I say thymus, I'm talking about T-H-Y-M-U-S. A lot of people think I'm saying sinus, like what's in your face. But this is the thymus gland.
Okay.
And basically, there's a very specific protocol to release old emotions from the past using the thymus gland tapping. But you're absolutely right that in the moment of stress, tapping on the thymus gland is extremely helpful for releasing it in the moment, calming the whole energy system, and also giving the immune system a boost in the time it needs it most. So why don't I tell everybody exactly where the thymus gland is so they'll know where to tap it for themselves. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, so where the notch of your neck is, where you would tie a tie if you were going to wear a tie, if you just find that little notch of your neck and you go about an inch below, you may feel a gently raised area in your chest right under your sternum. Your thymus gland sits right below there, so about an inch below the notch of your neck.
Okay.
The really great thing about doing this tapping is when you tap, you're creating a percussion effect that's sort of moving through that space and clearing the energy. So even if you weren't exactly on the thymus gland, you would still get that same percussion effect as long as you're tapping. And when I'm feeling stressed, I usually just tap for as long as I, until I start to feel a little bit better. But this is also just a really great energy balancing technique that you can use several times during the day. I usually tap for between 15 and 30 seconds and take some big, deep breaths. So it's a good overall balancing, a good immune system boost, and a good stress reliever as well.
And that literally is something that you can do for yourself without a lot of drama and without a lot of expense.
Exactly. Totally free, totally easy. And I teach it to kids all the time, too, when they're feeling really angry or really sad. It's nice to give them a tool to use. So this helps anybody, kids or adults, not suppress the emotion, but sort of be present for the emotion, but at the same time, help your body to process and release it so it doesn't get stuck. So you're not ignoring the emotion. You're just, while you're crying or while you're stressed or while you're angry, you're just tapping at the same time.
So you are allowing yourself to feel the emotion, but it sounds like with the tapping, it does that reduce the intensity of it or the fear of it and allow you to release it? How does that work?
Yes. Okay. So basically what you're doing is while you're feeling the strong emotion, it's coming up in your body. It's really close to the surface. The tapping really allows your body to move it through and out of your system, so to disperse that emotion. But you're still getting a chance to sort of acknowledge it and let it come up, because remember, the reason that things get stuck is because we don't acknowledge them. We tell ourselves, oh, you shouldn't be angry, get over it. So this allows us to feel angry, but also feel better by moving it out of our system. So it's sort of a complete cycle of acknowledging it, feeling it, and then seeing it move out.
So you don't have to be so afraid of it.
Exactly, because if you're not afraid of it, you just go, oh, I'm angry. Okay, maybe I wish I wasn't, but I am. Emotion will move. That's how emotion works. It's very, very fleeting, unless we try to push it away, and then it's not, and then it will just keep on trying to come back. So, I don't even like to use the term negative emotion, because no emotion is negative, but it does become negative if we give it that label, if we try to ignore it, if we, don't deal with it, then it gets stuck, and then it is a negative problem we have.
Amy, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like for you to talk to our listeners about how to tell whether or not you are holding on to emotions in a harmful way. Certainly, there may be people listening who really don't know that they are, but in fact they are. So we're going to be right back, folks, and when we return, we will continue the conversation with Amy B. Scheer, author of How to Heal Yourself When No One Else Can. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Amy, are there ways to tell whether or not one is in fact hanging on to trapped emotions?
Absolutely. So there's a couple of ways. One of the ways that we can tell is if we're being triggered off. So that means that we are feeling angry, sad, little things are getting, well, not little things, but things that seem little are getting us really upset. We have something that happens at work or at home that then brings up something that happened in the past. Oh, this feeling like everybody's always against me, or remembering, when something similar happened in the past. So it's if you're triggered often, if things are, old things are activated often, if you feel like everything's affecting you in a really big way, that's a really good indication that there's old stuff that keeps coming up. The second way is physical symptoms in the body. I have not had a single client that had physical symptoms where we couldn't find some emotional root. That doesn't mean that the physical thing isn't actually there. We're not denying any medical issues. We're just saying, is there an emotional stress that could have triggered that, or that is keeping it stuck in place? And if we clear that, will that affect the physical? And oftentimes it helps the body heal, if nothing else. But sometimes if you clear the actual root, the whole problem just collapses. You'll just find that the symptoms just go away. So if you have physical symptoms that aren't, especially that aren't being helped by anything else, the chances of there being an emotional component or emotional root are really good. And then there's just sometimes feelings like you feel heavy, or you just always feel low or tired. A lot of times that's, again, not denying any medical issues, but just old heavy emotion that gets stuck. And I would say another way, last way, is just listen to what's going on in your brain. So sometimes if we stop and we listen to the inner workings of our mind, we'll find out, oh my gosh, we're like reviewing all this old stuff from the past, and we have all these negative stories in our head. And that's another way to know if you're hanging on to stuff. Are you constantly talking about in your head what this person just did to you, or how this person wronged you, or whatever? So our own brains are a pretty good indication of what's going on.
So are there, in terms of the physical piece, give us an example, if you can, of what some of the physical issues were that clients of yours experienced that turned out to have, at least in part, the sort of negative emotional piece in there. Not that the emotions are negative, as you said, but that they were managing the emotions in a negative way.
Sure. So I'll give you a couple of examples that I've just kind of seen over and over again. So one of them is definitely linked to digestive system. So our digestive system metaphorically represents being able to sort of assimilate life and what happens to us, and process it and digest it and let go of it. So I've definitely had many clients who have had just really difficult digestive issues that when we work on old emotional experiences, the time somebody hurt their feelings, or the time they lost that job and disappointed themselves, or whatever, once we help them process, assimilate, and move that through their system, the digestive system starts working again. And it's amazing. So it's the digestive system is actually a good sort of message that there's something from the past that they're not digesting and really letting go of. So that's an example for digestive system. And then there's also a lot of times legs, knees, or feet. So if there's any problems with the legs, a lot of times will be about fear of moving forward. The legs are linked to the energy in the body that governs the kidneys. And kidneys, as far as the emotion that they're paired to, is fear. So a lot of times fear of moving forward, because that's sort of the message the body is giving through problems with the legs, feet, or knees. Problems moving forward or fear moving forward, if that is worked through, will really help the lower body in that way. And I have in the book, there's sort of a whole list, many pages of parts of the body and what your body could be telling you about what you need to clear you know, in your life emotionally in order to help, you know, release those symptoms.
That's really fascinating. When you say that you work on releasing the emotions, are you talking about talking through the emotions, or is there something else that's going on in addition to the tapping?
Yeah, so we'll talk and tap at the same time usually, or we'll do one of the other various techniques. Some of them don't require any talking. So there's one technique that I have that I created called the sweep, that works on really just sweeping old beliefs and energies out of the body. And so we won't really talk about them. We'll just try to identify what it is that needs to be cleared. Let's say, let's use your example of the, you know, family where everybody went into education as a career. Let's say that somebody learned from that I'll only be loved if I do what makes everybody else happy, which is a very, very common one. So we'll use the sweep script, which is in the book, and we'll have them fill in the blank with that, you know, with that belief, and just close their eyes, put their hands over their heart, and repeat after me. I'll lead them through it. So in that one, there's talking, but we don't talk about the issue. We're just using the specific phrases that I've created that I know allow the body to release. You know, in the tapping, we do talk about the problem or about the emotions as we tap. So they all work a little bit differently.
So for you, I mean, when you were in your 20s, having the best job and the best time of your life, then you became ill, then you took that little tiny trip over to New Delhi, then you came back, then you were ill again. What's your life like today?
So I've been well for many, many years now, working on the emotional aspect. For me, using energy therapy was what healed me permanently and completely, and I have never had those symptoms back again, thank goodness, and it's been many years now. And so now I think my life is pretty darn normal. I'm married. I have a full-time energy therapy practice. I teach an online course. I write my books. I mean, it's so interesting because I always wanted to just, when I was sick, I never wanted to, like, get better and then travel the world. I always just wanted to get better and then have enough energy to, like, go to the supermarket and have a job and just do all the normal, you know, the normal real life things that most people complain about. But that's exactly what I have now, and I love it. So I lead a very full, busy, fun life, and I'm totally healthy.
You know, it's interesting that you make the point, which is so true, that a lot of times people take for granted what other people long to be able to accomplish. Walking up the steps pain-free, or even just walking up the steps, for an example. For those who can do it, they tend to forget that there are those who cannot and would love to be able to.
Right, and it's hard when we're that person who can do it, and we forget there are people that can't. It's hard to, in that moment, appreciate it because we don't have any contrasting experience to show us why. We understand why it's so amazing that we can do it, and that we are usually grateful for that. But when you don't have a contrasting experience, it's really hard. When I was really sick, I didn't sleep very well, and I was so uncomfortable in my body that, like, being up in the middle of the night was the most painful, worst thing for me, because I often couldn't roll over in bed by myself. I had a really hard time just moving, and I was in so much pain. And still to this day, if I wake up in the middle of the night to roll over, I am so conscious and grateful that I can roll over by myself. Like, it doesn't even bother me if I'm up in the middle of the night and I can't sleep. I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, how amazing is it that my body is so comfortable right now? So, you know, but I have the contrasting experience that still lives within me to some extent to remind me of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let me ask you this. Are there folks for whom the energy healing is not a good path to pursue?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't think that clearing old emotional baggage could ever be bad. Are there people where that won't be their path to health? Yes. I just, like with anything, you know, When I went to the stem cell clinic, there were people like me who made miraculous improvements, and then there were people who didn't see anything. And I think, you know, such a big part of life and the healing journey is finding what works for us. So I would say that, I mean, I think it's worth everybody trying. I mean, even the most mainstream Western doctors now are really talking about how stress and emotional our emotional selves have a huge impact on the physical body. That is just so proven at this point that it simply cannot hurt to work on the emotional aspect. And will it be a miracle for everybody? I don't know, but I've been in practice long enough and seen, you know, worked with thousands of people, and for many, many people, it makes a huge difference.
You talked earlier about even teaching this technique to children. How old? Is there a child that's too young? Is there a child that's the perfect age?
I would say, I mean, with kids, I'm always really careful depending on what age the child is, because you also, you know, they only can grasp so much, and you also don't want to scare them by telling them they have all these negative emotions in their bodies. You have to be a little bit careful. But I mean, pretty much any age, like even from 2 years old, can do that tapping on their thymus gland. So that can just be a self, sort of a coping mechanism or a self-help tool that you can give a child, and they can use their fist and just gently, you know, tap that way. They can use a flat hand. It doesn't have to be their fingertips. It just has to stimulate that gland. But I would say, I actually work with a lot of teenagers, and I would say that's such an important age, because most of them really are starting to get it and they understand. And it makes them feel good to understand that they're not just angry for no reason, that, oh, maybe something happened a while ago or a few things happened, and, you know, that their bodies just haven't let go of it. So I think it's really healthy. A lot of kids can tend to blame themselves, or they feel blamed by adults for always acting out. And it helps them, you know, if they're old enough to understand, like, oh, everybody gets angry about these things and it's okay. And so I feel like it makes such a big difference. But, you know, you just have to explain it differently for different ages. But I would say starting at 2, they're young enough to do some of this work.
Interesting. You know, I would think that in pregnant households that this could be a really useful stress reducer, because we know pregnancy can be a time of great stress for, you know, everyone who's involved.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. When I tracked back, I have a technique called muscle testing where I can actually test to figure out kind of what's stuck in the subconscious mind. And I explain how everybody can do that in my book. But you're able to really find the specific ages or incidences that created this stuck energy in your body. And for me, a lot of them went back to age 2, where I certainly didn't remember much. But my little brother was born when I was 2, and you're right, that does have a really big impact. So even though that was a really happy thing in my household for a 2-year-old, that probably was scary and made me angry and, you know, some other things as well. And so, no, you have a really good point. That's a huge time of transition.
Yeah, and once he was born, he took over your preferred status.
Exactly.
That's pretty rude.
You know, yeah, I know, and thank goodness I love him. But yeah, now that I'm an adult, but I don't know when I was little. So yeah, it is true the way that that can affect a child. And listen, some kids aren't affected. Like, people ask me all the time, well, you know, why am I sick, but my sister who went through the same things isn't? I mean, we all come into the world as our own sensitive people that react to some things and not others, and we're just different. So there's no blame, just some of us end up more affected by things than others.
I think one of the important things that you have brought up throughout our conversation today is the fact that emotions are emotions. I mean, they're not good, they're not bad, they just are. They are a part of being human, that you have emotions. And being okay with the reality that you have a range of emotions, that in and of itself can be a gift to so many people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Just learning that we're all human, we all have emotions, we don't need to judge our emotions, we just, you know, need to acknowledge them, have them, process them, and move on. That's what we're meant to do.
So, in fact, it sounds like life can be a more joyful experience than it is, certainly for those people who tend to look at life as though the glass is half empty.
Right, right. And, you know, once you release the old stuff, then you're not looking through that lens anymore. So even if you've always been a glasses half empty person, when you clear all of the, or not all, you don't need to do it all, but if you make a dent in the old emotional baggage you're carrying around, you'll be surprised how differently you see life, because you're not seeing it through that lens of hurt and anger and sadness and all of those old emotions.
Indeed. Amy Scheer, you have a website. Can you share that with us?
Sure. My website is www.amybscher.com. And on my website, I have lots of free information. I have, you can just learn all about energy therapy, what it does, how it works. I also have a 10-week online course, which is basically my book, How to Heal Yourself When No One Else Can, in action. So it's a video course where we go through all of the aspects of emotional healing and how I healed myself, and just lots of good stuff to learn on that website.
Terrific. And that's Amy B. Scheer, SCHER.com.
Yes.
All righty. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this really fascinating look at how one can heal oneself. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical or mental health professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. It is available to you on demand anytime you choose, simply by going to myndtalk.org. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, you can always send me an email to Pamela, that's Pamela, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's mind with a Y, myndtalk.org. And folks, I want you to remember always, always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.